to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy Wide. I am Hardy Wide. Join me now, won't you? And take a journey. Listen to a story. And then forget the story. And then forget you're on a journey. And figure out that you're lost. But then turn around and see I'm with you. Because we're lost together. We're lost together. Oh, hello, my friends. You are asking, what kind of show is this? What is it about? What is it about? Why, it's about you, my friend. It's about you. There was an old TV show on a long time ago called This Is Your Life. Well, this is your life. We're going to be talking about your life today. You say, well, you don't know me. I know. That way I can't get it wrong. But this is your life. Now, the TV show would, what they'd do is they'd bring out like a celebrity usually. And they'd say, celebrity, this is going to be your life. And they'd go, okay. And so you sit here, and now remember this, and from off stage you'd hear, I taught him in the first grade, and I remember he ate his boogers, and his head was a funny shape. I say, remember that voice? No, not really. Let's bring her on out. It's Mrs. Smith, your first grade teacher. Well, she doesn't really look familiar. That ain't him. So I don't know if they get it right or not, but that doesn't matter. You don't remember really what went on in the first grade, so it might as well be some actor or something playing your first grade teacher come out and give you some false memories. Why not? Because your life is that. It's cobbled together, half-remembered things, isn't it? Oh, say, oh, it's the story of your life. Story? Really, I don't think that an individual can tell their own story because to them, it's not really a story. It's a story to other people. So you could say, I'm going to tell the story of Hardy's life. That's great. Because you'd miss all that internal stuff, and you could just list events that happened one after another. Here's the time he fell off his tricycle. Here's the time he fell off his bicycle. Here's the time he fell off his adult tricycle. And you'd say, well, that's just chronological, just like that. But inside a person, it's not quite that easy. It's not really a narrative. It's more like a poem. Oh, yes. This is the poem of your life, not the story. So we're not going to have on old teachers. We might, but they're not necessarily yours. But maybe they give you the same feeling as your teacher gave you. You know, feeling insignificant or insufficient or something like that. Teachers can be good at that. They can also bring you up. They can also bring you up just like a bad meal. No, they can lift you up. They can give you what you need. They can teach you. And if you are receptive and you learn, then you can be just like them and you can complete the cycle of just teaching discouraged children. Oh, my goodness. That doesn't sound very great. Oh, it is great, though. Living in a poem is much better than living in a story. Stories, oh, gosh, what are they? They don't have all the detail that you have inside. They just lay out one thing, try to make an explanation for it, like Lord of the Rings or something. Oh, well, that's a bad example. That has way too much detail. So I don't want to learn about the town. I'm not going to go live in Middle Earth. I just want to know what happens with the hobo and the ring and everything. So, okay, but I'm going to throw all this other stuff in there because I like to world build. Oh, who doesn't like to world build? Children like to world build. That's why we take our little blocks and say, look at me, what are you making? I'm making a fort. What kind of fort? Oh, it's the fort. My people have been trapped in here and they're surrounded on all sides by the enemy. Oh, that's fantastic. What's going to happen? I suppose mass suicide. I don't know. Hey, shouldn't have taken you to Masada. Is there another scenario? We invite them in the fort. The fort becomes like a just an attraction, like the Daniel Boone fort, where you just go and there's reenactors and stuff. That sounds fantastic. I wish that all forts were like that. Can't we just reenact wars that haven't taken place yet? So we're getting ready to have a war. Say, let's instead of that, why don't we do this? Why don't we reenact the war that hasn't taken place yet? But like fake, like they do on Kennesaw Mountain, where they get five guys in wool, go out there and go, this is what it was like to be in the Civil War. No, it wasn't. Because I'll tell you one thing, those bathrooms were built a lot later. So you couldn't just say, oh, I can't get this can of beans open. I'm going to go use the restroom first. Perhaps if I move my bowels in that comfortable, clean public restroom, then I'll be ready to do battle with and back out here and murder my brother over ideology. Yes. Oh, this is your life. Do you remember this voice?
Hey.
No, I'm going to have to hear it again.
Hey, now.
I don't know. Do you remember, in 1988, you bought a muffler? And this is the fella that you bought the muffler from. Do you remember?
No.
Muffler Mike?
No.
Oh. That's funny, because when we were writing the book of your life, this is a big chapter. That's funny, because I have zero memory of it. That's kind of shocking. And it's true for my life, too. Say, oh, I remember things. I remember at 5. I have a very distinct memory. I was wearing short pants and holding a bird. And I remember this. I remember very distinctly. In fact, I believe there's a picture of it. That should make you suspicious. What do you mean? Maybe it's just the picture you remember. No, I remember being there. Because I remember at the time I was thinking, I'm wearing shorts and holding a bird. Mm-hmm. And then the picture's that, too. There, well, what was the context? Where were you? That I don't remember. You don't remember anything? No. What happened before and after? I don't remember. So maybe it is just the photograph. No, I remember. People are very attached to their memories, too, even if they're wrong. I am. I know I am. I've died on that hill of being absolutely wrong and just insisting because I thought I was right. Now, you can't go your whole life like Hardy White thinking, I don't know, because that's my motto. So I don't know. And a lot of times people want you to, if you don't know, to just say you do. Because, for instance, you're doing a job. And so you're sure you can handle this? Yes. And you know you can't. You're just lying. But that's something you need to do in the adult world. Is just kind of smile and say yes sometimes. We are all walking around quite baffled, I believe. Now, some of us settle on an answer. That's the thing you can do with your life. You have two options. You know, you're going to look your whole life for answers. You can arbitrarily pick some. That's what most people do. Or you can just go through the entire life not deciding on anything particularly. And I've done that a little bit. And what happens, you get to the end and it becomes so patently absurd that mainly you just kind of giggle all day long. And that's sort of what I do. Say, man, I have no idea what's going on. This is very strange. Human beings. What odd creatures. If aliens came and observed us, they'd say, what odd creatures. And then you'd wonder about the aliens, though. You'd wonder about their own self-knowledge. Yeah, but how enlightened are these aliens? Maybe they're just seeing themselves. Maybe it's the narcissism of minor differences. I'm sure there's an alien Sigmund Freud over there going, you know, a lot of times the humans, I can't do Freud accent. I'm just going to say Freud just sounds like me. Hello, I'm Sigmund Freud. Welcome to my office. Come on in. What's bothering you today? I have problems. Well, what's your problems? I don't know. The other day I was writing and I dropped my penis. Not my pen, my pencil. Ah, what did you just say? Said the alien Freud. You heard me. Well, a lot of times we look for answers, and what do we find? We don't find them. So I'm going to give you a hint. Go to the back of the book. They're all there. Now, just because you found the answers and write them in does not mean that you understand how the question led to the answer. Oh, exploring, my friend, is the greatest way to go. I could just give you information. I could come on here like other people do and say, in 1985, there was a crime committed. In a small village in North Northampton, in a tiny house occupied by the Smith family. Mrs. Smith was a first grade teacher, and she had taught a famous child in her first grade class, or so she thought. And then she went on, This Is Your Life, and was then murdered. Now, who murdered her? Was it the celebrity? I'll tell you who the celebrity was in a minute, and you tell me if you think they could do such thing as Captain Kangaroo. And not Bob Keeshan, who played Captain Kangaroo. I mean the actual Captain Kangaroo, the war hero from World War II. Now, they called him that because he'd keep hand grenades in his pocket. And he'd come out and he'd go, you know, you better start hopping because the Captain Kangaroo's going to start popping. And he'd pull out the hand grenades out of his pocket and go, woo! And he had a whole team with him. This guy named Bunny Rabbit or Gunny Rabbit, they'd call him sometimes. And then that might have even been a parody where they made Bunny Rabbit Gunny Rabbit now that I'm thinking about it. Oh, my goodness. You know what's very difficult to do is it's very difficult to operate in the creative world because of puns. Puns have generated more ideas over the years than have actual poetic connections. What's that? Yes. Would you believe that a lot of things that we think are novel ideas are actually constructed because the words sound similar? So we've become so addicted to puns. They're our names of our business, you know? Hair goes or something, and it'll be a hair salon. But what happens is you descend into puns, and you become enamored with the sound of things, and you end up making connections with things that have no real connections, but that's wonderful and poetic, isn't it? Isn't it? Is it? Is it, though? Isn't it? I don't know. If things sound like one another, are they related to one another? Hardy, you sound like this, my friend Bob Shrimp. Is it? Bob Shrimp goes on the radio and he says a similar thing to you, and he also has an accent. What kind of accent does he have? French. Well, that's a little different. Yeah, but it's an accent, and also he talks on the radio. Does he? Yes, well, 80 years ago. Well, that's not when I'm doing it, really. But you're very similar. I think you got a lot from him. I've never really heard of him, this Bob Shrimp. That's funny, because I'm writing a book called Bob Shrimp and Hardy White, The Evolution of Radio That Doesn't Do Anything. Well, that's interesting. I would love to be on This Is My Life, too. I wonder who would be on there. I'd like just have it end loaded, so it's just all y'all. So you recognize this voice? Hey, Hardy.
Hi, Hardy.
Hello, Hardy.
Hi, Hardy. Oh, that's all those are my friends. Bring them on out. Let's just have a party. Let's skip all this stuff. Are you implying that by introducing people from my past, school teachers, old chums, school chums, what are school chums? School chums are people that used to cut them up and use them to fish a lot of times. All those, hey, tell me something about myself. No. What will tell me something about myself? I don't know. When we see children after a long time, now this first few years of your life are crazy, how much you develop, how much you change. And when we see children, we'll say, oh, my, how you've grown. And a lot of times you think that's height, but it's not really. What people are referring to, more often than not, is the crazy way your skull has changed and grown in a grotesque and horrifying way so quickly. It went from being this nice round cherub-like head, cherubic head, all right, to something like a Ferengi or something. Your bones started to grow in your face and the cheekbones started to pop through and everything, and your brow, and, oh, it's this thing that happens, and your face becomes angular and large, and you're saying, oh, child, your head seems to be growing right in front of me. That must hurt. No, I'm fine. They sleep a lot because their face is growing, and it's pushing through the skin like that. The skull is actually expanding. And you say, well, do I feel it? I don't know. You must. I think I felt it. So where is this going? What's the end game? And then you see your beautiful, hideous adult head, and you think, well, now things are all different, I guess, and they are. Oh, yes, the time of innocence is over. Things that were soft are now no longer, like your fontanelle and everything. Your skull is like, oh, well, we're closing those little doors. Those tiny little openings are going to seal up on your skull. And you're locked in now. Before, your essence, your soul, could leak out through some of those cracks because you're still a child. But now you've reached adulthood, and your head looks like a hadrosaur, and you're here we go. And it's going to be full of memories, and some are going to be correct, and some are going to be wrong. And the things that you know about yourself, and the stories that you tell about yourself, oh, how correct are they going to be? That's why I'm telling you, We've got to move on to telling poetry about ourselves. What is the poem of Hardy White's life? Oh, I don't know. It's mainly impressions. I can tell you this. I felt loved and taken care of. A lot of us have, even if things got bad later. Usually as a baby, a lot of times are, not everybody. Oh, my gosh. You know that. But for you know, a lot of us, though, our needs were met, at least in that brief beginning time where you cry out and suddenly you were eating. And that doesn't happen anymore. I mean, sometimes I'm like, is this anyone's table? Did I get sit in a section that's got no server? I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or anything. I see other servers coming by and refusing to make eye contact with me, which is cool because this is not their table. But now I'm thinking nobody got assigned that table and I'm blaming the host. Now, again, I'm not trying to be a jerk or anything. I was just hoping somebody, I'm so hungry. Perhaps that's it. I'm a little bit grouchy. You know what? You guys don't have to wait on me. This is silly. I'll get my own stuff. Where's the kitchen? No, you can't do that. All right, I'm just going to go ahead and leave. I should be cooking for myself. This is a valuable lesson. I need to be home making stuff at home. I don't have to be here being waited on. And they'll say, wait. What? This isn't a restaurant. This is your life. Who are all these people around here? Oh, police. Oh, this isn't my life, is it? No, I'm sorry, it's an arrest warrant. But we thought you'd come down here for either some kind of vanity thing where you're the center of attention. That's a good one. Or have a restaurant meal. That was a gamble because I really could have gone anywhere. Well, we know, but we have every restaurant in town now is set up as a sting operation, so we're pretty much covered. Am I that big of a criminal? Yes. Why? You are an enemy of the state, Hardy. Why? Because of the message that you're giving people. What is the message that you're giving people? I think you're making them feel unsure, and we don't want that. No matter what side you are on, you want people to be absolutely certain. You want them to be sure of everything they're doing. You want them to be committed in a way that aligns them with your side permanently, forever, in a deep moral way. And Hardy's there saying, man, everything's just too weird and confusing. And that is bad because that will leave doubt and you will start looking and exploring when you should have shut that off already and just have decided on what you believe and go around pontificating. But instead, I say, why not keep your eyes open? Why not keep looking and investigating? What's the harm in that? If you are out to solve a mystery, let's say The Mystery of the Green Ghost by Alfred Hitchcock presents The Three Investigators. All right, I think that was one. You're out to solve the mystery of the Green Ghost. Now, you go in the house, you say, oh, I see the Green Ghost. Let's look around for a projector. No projector. Let's look around for some other stuff. Can't find that. Dude, let's look at projector again. All right, dude, I don't know. I think, how about hallucinogens? Maybe they put something in our tea that's making us see a green ghost. Why would we all hallucinate the same thing? Okay, I don't know. So what's the answer? Well, we have four possible answers. Let's just go ahead and pick one. I'm sure one of them is the right answer. Okay, solved. Da-da-da-da-da. It's impossible to leave that haunted house without explaining what the ghost is. Nobody wants to do that. And leave and say, I guess I don't know. Because they think that means, I guess I'll never know. But it doesn't. You can explore something for your life. Why not do that? Why not understand that some mysteries are going to remain a mystery? That doesn't mean you stop looking, and it doesn't mean you just come up with some answer. You don't have to answer everything. People ask me my opinion all the time, and I think that means they want it. But I'm not sure it does, necessarily. What if I don't have an opinion? I always feel forced to come up with one.
Say, what do you think of all this problem with the Teapot Dome scandal?
Well, I mean, I can tell you what I know about it, or what I've heard, or what I think is true, and I can tell you sort of like what I think is moral and right. But as far as having like opinions that for hills I'm going to die on, I don't know. Things change. My mind's been changed. Now, I'm firm about some things. Like if I see somebody doing violence or something, I'm going to act. But anything short of that, really, I don't know what's going on. And you don't have to act like that to think it. My mind's a little secret society. I'm decisive and I do things, but inside, I'm laughing. Inside, I'm laughing because I know that nobody knows what's going on and we're all pretending. And I know we have to pretend because otherwise things might be crazy. But perhaps it will lighten your heart a little bit to know that, everybody around you is essentially a lost, confused child. Some of them violently murderous. That happens, we know that. Oh, human beings. Oh, they're capable of so many things, and so are our little animals, too. But we like to make them into cartoons. I don't want to see their real behavior. Humans in cartoons tend to maintain their viciousness and everything, but animals become... Oh, that's not true. Look at the cat and the mouse one. The cat's pretty murderous, I guess. Would the mouse be, too, if it were that size? We don't know. If Tom and Jerry were flipped, I think that mouse would be going after the cat. It's just a power differential thing. Oh, everybody's got to kick down, right? Kiss up and kick down. Oh, not me. I kiss out. I kiss out and I don't even bother to kick. Why kick? It's not gonna eliminate the kicks from me. If I'm getting kicked, kicking doesn't, unless I kick the kick, it doesn't help me. You know, if my boss yells at me, I'm not going to go yell at my dog unless my dog is my boss. Welcome to Teenage After School Theater. In this one, the dog becomes your boss at the Crispy Smooth, where you work after school. That's crazy. My dog is my boss, it's called. And it's a funny one. It's a teenage comedy. Oh, my friends, I don't know how old you are, but come and get on the Hardy White ship. You only have to be this height. What's the height? It's very tiny height. It's the height of a small little bean. Because who knows, there could be little people. And I don't want to exclude them and not have them on my fun ship of exploring your life and memory. Why would I exclude them? And large people, too, unless they're too large for the ship. And then that's not a matter of exclusion. That's just, we'll do something. If you're that big, you can walk along and wade next to the ship. I'd love that. I wish I had a friend who was a giant, and he could be walking in the ocean, and then I have my ship next to the giant, and then on the ship with me is all my little tiny friends, very, very tiny people that live in the palm of my hand. That, to me, is diversity, and that would be wonderful. There's so many creatures on the earth. Oh, and they all long to have a big tea party or something. I'm not sure that's true. I think a lot of them like their privacy, and I don't quite blame them. Sometimes I like to be in groups and go to parties. Other times, I like to hang by my feet in a cave, and I could see why that would be. Bats like to do that. Some things are solitary creatures. I'm sure there's a creature so solitary we've never even seen it. How about that? That could be. Oh, there's so much on this earth. It's so funny. When something's a mystery, people are actually more inclined to believe it. Did you know that? If I said to you, there could be something, you probably very quickly mentally get to there is that. So if I could say, there could be a large creature living in a lake somewhere. Now, probably not, I say. Now, what I've said is I've said that to debunk it, right? But what I've really done is I've created a sea monster. And now that lives in your mind. And as much as you want it to not be there, that sea monster is living there and becomes a distinct possibility. Even though it's the one thing I said probably isn't there, it's now something you think, yes, it could be there. Same thing with Bigfoot and all. It's so likely. Say, oh, I so believe that there could be a large animal in the woods. That's how vast they are. It's so likely that it's true. Oh, isn't that insane? No. We do that with all sorts of things. Oh, right up to the human soul. Everything that seems like it could be likely. We bring it into existence. All the monsters, all the things in our imagination, all the solutions we have for things become their own sort of reality. And we swim among them like somebody threw too many toys in the pool. We're floating all among these possibilities. And most of them are not real, but we've made them real because they're affecting our experience. Yes, oh, I have a T-shirt and it has a picture of Champ on it. Champ is the monster that lives in Lake Champlain in Burlington, Vermont. There he is, a Champ. There's a picture of him. I got him on a shirt. I went to the store. Someone said, hey, Champ, I know Champ. You start talking about him. Isn't this interesting? And Champ becomes just as real as Gertie the dinosaur or any other living creature like that. Isn't that strange? Hardy White is even alive. Is Hardy White real? What do you mean by real? We explore that all the time on the show. Oh, explore. Are you really exploring? Here's the difference. The difference between miracle nutrition, all right, and what you might think is sort of a polished show on the public radios, all right, or one of them, or a podcast, all right, is the difference between, okay, all right, it's the difference between real archaeology and Indiana Jones. So not rear archaeology, that's proctology. Real archaeology is boring a lot of times. You will sit in a space and you will brush dirt with a dust, I'd believe I'll dust my broom. And you sit there for hours and hours and you might find nothing. Or you might find a little fragment and you think, I think this is a tooth. And you go, no, it's gum. So that goes on and on and on because to find something real, to find real evidence like that, you must cull through a lot of other stuff, a lot of junk. In the fictions, in the movies, they jump off an airplane and they run into a cave and there is an artifact and there's golden skulls and everything like that. But finding truth in life is more mundane than that. It doesn't always drop in your lap. And some of the pre-wrapped, prefab truth is not going to do it for you. You need to find it on your own. So if you're looking for enlightenment in some sort of broadcast, if you're looking for enlightenment in some sort of art, if you want some answer dropped into your lap, and who doesn't want things dropped into your lap? Depends on what they are, I imagine. I don't want a bowling ball, but I wouldn't mind, say, oh, I don't know, one of those kind of cornstarch solutions that they pour on children in 90s TV shows. That wouldn't be bad. I mean, it wouldn't be great, but it wouldn't be bad. But still, I don't really want anything in my lap, not even children on Christmas if I'm Santa. I like to look on my own. And every time I go in the woods, I don't find a miracle. Oh, no, I don't find something shiny or exciting. I would say 9 times out of 10, I find what appears to be nothing. But I look hard each time. I don't want to miss anything. Because even if I don't understand what I see, I am seeing it. And if I think I already know an answer, I'll be blind. I'll be completely blind. And I won't go into your Bible stories, but they've got Isaac is a great example. I could go on and on about willingly closing your eyes, willingly not seeing reality because you think you know the way things are. To open your eyes and to look around, to really explore and to have patience. I require it. I'm sorry. I do. I know that a lot of people don't require you to have patience with some things, and they will sit down to do a piece of music or something, and they go, well, what's the current attention span? And if you do that, let's say you make videos or something for social media, you'll see the current attention span, how much time people are able to, and this is no fault of their own, it's just there's so much stuff, is they spend less and less and less and less time on something. So you get 30 minutes of something going by. And they digest it and they shove it into themselves. It's like fast food, except it's information. And this goes in, messages, day after day. Cookies, 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 cookies. They even call them cookies online. Say, cookie, you gonna accept this cookie? Yes, just keep shoving it in my mouth. Because to sit down with a bowl of soup over time, to eat slowly, or to have things brought out to you, little bits here and just a little snack on little things, taste. That's what I'm interested in. I'm interested in the long-term exploring. There are folks, some of you have been listening to this show for years, which means you've heard hundreds of hours we've been talking to, and I don't even think we begin to get to the answers. We've not even begin to touch on anything. A lot of times, we spend the time consoling one another. It's just like if you went to church, and most of the time, instead of talking about theology, you were just hugging and eating donuts, because that's what you needed right now. That's what you need. Sometimes you just need to be consoled. Sometimes you just need to be healed. Sometimes you just need to be loved. This being informed, 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 informed for what? What's all this being shoved in your head for? Sometimes I think people are storing their stolen goods in the storage unit of my mind. Why are you shoving all this in here? Why do I need to know it? Yeah, get it in your head. It's going to be useful later. Is it? I'm scared. I think I need to reset. I was trying to figure out how my life is going. Now you're throwing all this stuff at me, and I'm supposed to figure out all the secret machinations of the world and how people organize themselves and the stories they're telling. I got to memorize everybody's story, even though most of it's lies. I can't do it. I can't do it. I must put story away, and I must make my life a poem. I must base it on the things that I feel. Well, feelings aren't thought. I'm thinking, too. I just realize it's limitations sometimes. Everybody's either smarter or dumber than they think they are. But nobody is encouraged to find their balance. You know? Nobody. Because there's agendas and everything. But I've been in situations where nobody talks about those things even. They just talk about the things we're doing. What we need to do to survive. Things like that. Oh, I won't put anything in your head. I am not your divorced friend looking to store his furniture for a while. Hey, you've got a shed. I'm newly divorced and have all this furniture. Can I put it in there? Well, I don't know. I don't know. Oh, come on. Please. Well, I got my own stuff. Yeah, but now put my stuff in there, too. I don't always have room for that in my head. I was leaving it open so I could dance. I like a lot of room in my mind palace because I like to have dance parties in there. And so sometimes I'll just shove things out of the way. And you say, those are memories. Why are you shoving that memory out of the way? I say, well, it's a party from college, and I've got a lot of them, and I just don't need this one anymore. I'm going to toss it out. Do you, Swedish death, clean the memories of your mind? Let's get them out there before the end. Some of them I got to get them out. The radio show helps me with that. I will regurgitate my memories. You can have them. I'm not using them anymore. They weren't helpful, a lot of them. A lot of them are absolutely interchangeable with yours. That's the other thing I've learned from the radio. That's an interesting one. When you have cultural touchstones, you'll be sitting around with other people and you go, we all have the same memories. That can't be right, true, or good, can it? I don't know. And you say, well, it makes me relate to that person. Yeah, because you think that's you, maybe. Well, you're just like me. You might be just another me. Maybe you're me over there. So you're saying that you watched Kimba the White Lion?
I did watch Kimba the White Lion.
I did too. Now, don't tell me you watched the Globetrotters cartoon.
I did watch the Globetrotters cartoon.
We are the same person. Oh, my gosh. I don't even know how I can relate to other people now. But see, those things are just strange details that I no longer cling to, necessarily. I no longer need anybody to affirm that I was, in fact, a child and didn't know anything. because the person that was observing those things then is different. I got more stuff in my head now. I see the world differently. And I can't ever get back those feelings. But I can remember the feelings, sort of. And I can celebrate the feelings without tying them to a specific thing. It wasn't that Pop-Tart that made me feel like that. It wasn't that Saturday morning cartoon. All this infantile nostalgia I have, it isn't about really the how special that place and time was and everything. Particularly, it had to do with my brain, my new, mushy, uncontaminated brain that saw everything as strange and unusual, everything as a mystery. Some of those mysteries revealed made me feel great. Some of them crushed me. There was a show on when I was a child called The Munsters. Now, The Munsters had a funny premise. The premise of The Munsters was the Munsters were monsters and didn't know they were monsters, and everybody else was normal, but they looked like monsters with an O. But their name was Munster because they were German. And they'd say, it's Munster. But they were like, oh, what? Everybody. So they thought they were only normal ones. And in fact, they're hideous monsters, except for the mom, who's like, I don't know, not quite a monster. Or the daughter, just the men. The men were monstrous. Thinking about that now, the women seem fine to me. The men were all monsters. I think that's some kind of metaphor, but I don't understand what it is. But anyway, so the boy, Eddie, loved a TV show called Zombo. And Zombo was a TV show with a guy with a lot of hair on his face, and his name was Zombo, like that. And Zombo was played by actor Louis Nye, the late Louis Nye. And Louis and I was Zombo. I'm Zombo. So Eddie wins some kind of trip to meet Zombo. And Zombo is his hero. He loves him more than his father because he's even more hideous and monstrous than his own dad. And so he goes to the studio and he meets Zombo. And Zombo says, I am Zombo. And then Zombo goes backstage and he's having his makeup removed and his prosthetic nose and teeth and the hair that's glued on his face. And Eddie becomes horrified when he sees that underneath this makeup is an actor. You're not Zombo, he said. No, Eddie, I'm not. You're nothing to be scared of. I hate you. I hate you. You're not Zombo. And I remember him picking up something sharp and violently stabbing Louis Nye. I don't know if that happened, but he was really... It was a scary episode for me because he was out of control. The child went out of control. He was apoplectic. And Eddie, no. And because he had been crushed like that. It'd be like saying Big Bird out of the suit, especially now since the actor's dead. But I remember that so well. And I thought, you know, just seeing reality is traumatizing to you because you've already decided that Zombo is real. But is Zombo not real? How is Zombo not real? You know, there are clowns that their pictures are still famous. The people who played the clowns are long gone, but the clown is still famous. There are cartoon characters, the voice of which has been dead for decades, but the cartoon character, it's still going on. In a way, it's more alive than the person who played it. In a way, the roles are more alive than the person who played it. On movies, we see people like, is Willy Wonka dead? You mean Johnny Depp? No, the other one? Yes. But is Willy Wonka dead? Because I can watch that movie and all of a sudden he seems very alive. And I'm not even talking about the actor. I'm talking about Willy Mernemacken Wonka. Because the fictional things inhabit our reality. Hardy White inhabits your reality. There is a you. There is a you other people see, like a fictional you, a you that plays roles. Oh, yes, you are Zombo. I am Zombo. We ought to get T-shirts like that. People won't know what we're saying. Say, I am Zombo.
There is somebody beneath this makeup. Is that the real me? Maybe it's the realer me, but who knows? At the center of this, what's at the center of a Tootsie Roll is some kind of gum or lozenge or something, but at the center, not a lozenge, that would be redundant. What's at the center of a Tootsie Pop? Another Tootsie Pop. It's imperceptible. You can't even, you don't even know when you get to it. But what if at the center of the Tootsie Pop is almost nothing? There's almost nothing there. So how could nothing be at the center of everything? That's amazing. I'm not sure it's true, but it's wonderful to think. Oh, come with me on these flights of fancy. I'm going to strap you in. What if I get motion sickness? We don't move. That's the wonderful thing. I do too. Oh, I also get motion sickness. I get motion sickness if I'm watching a tennis match. It's terrible. I wish I could do. People go, I want to take you out on my boat. No one ever says that to me, but if they did, I'd say, oh, I have to decline unless you want, I mean, I don't know where, I spray vomit all over. I'm not even going to lie to you. I think it'd be bad. I'd be sick. So even if there was a convenient place to sick up, I was the other day, I was getting my, I had hernia operation recently, and I was going back for a check-in to see if it was successful. I knew it was, but the doctor wanted to look. And so I was in there, and the resident came in, and she said, okay. And she wasn't, she was incredible. But I don't know if the English was her first language. She had mastered it, absolutely. But you know how there's idioms and everything? So she put her fingers in the affected area. And then she said, could you cough up? And I go, what, do I owe you money? And she says, could I get you to cough up? Like a, what, like a penny? I don't understand. She just meant cough. But it was putting that up there. It threw me there for a minute. So I cough up. Can I regurgitate it? Oh, yes, let me cough up. That's what happens when we go to cocktail parties. They say, I'm going to put my fingers right here and say, now cough up. Tell me something about yourself. Oh, you're putting me on the spot. This is why I don't go to cocktail parties, because I feel like I'm being judged. I feel like I'm going to say something stupid. I feel like more people will like me if they only think they know me, if they actually see some evidence, if they know how my mind works. If I betray something within myself, some deficiency or something, then you're not going to like me. And then I shall be ostracized. And then I will be friendless. So you'd rather have friends that you are deceiving. No, that doesn't seem right either. How burdensome. What if I had to pretend every time I saw my friends? It's hard. It's very difficult. I've always found to say, well, just be yourself. How do you do that? I've never even known how to do that. I've told people to do that. But, you know, sometimes you take the masks away and there's nothing there. There's nothing there. There's just that bony head, that weird misshapen skull that we carry around our brains in. There must be something more. I don't know. I shall never know. People who came before me, doesn't seem like they quite knew. A lot of people have settled on things, but did that work out for them necessarily? I do not know. I'm gonna keep on wondering. That's what I want you to do. Just maintain the wonder. Keep your eyes open. Look at things you normally would. Don't become jaded. Don't turn into jade. Some people turn into other materials like that. Say, well, I'm turning into jade. Well, that's a lovely one. I'm turning into opal. Well, that's very pretty. What are some other things you can turn into? Malachite or something. But I don't want to turn into anything. I don't want to turn. I want to become mist. I want to become vapor. I want to float through the world. I want to see things, though. I don't want to miss it. I look like that. Even when I'm driving down streets that I'm familiar with, I try to always look to the side and try to see something I haven't noticed before. Because there's no worse feeling than driving down a street that you have already driven down a million times, year after year, to look to the side and say, oh my God, they tore a building down. And then their next thought is, what building? I don't remember what was there. I've driven by it every day. I don't remember what was there. I took it for granted, I guess. Perhaps it became virtually invisible to me.
because I thought I knew. I thought I knew what was there, so I never had to turn my head. The building that is torn down that you cannot remember. What about the people? What about the people that you never turn your head and look at? And then they're gone, and you notice they're gone, but you don't know who was there. You just feel their absence in the world. That must happen to us daily. Oh, there are people that have disappeared out of this world. Their absence is felt acutely by some, and not at all by others, because perhaps they were never noticed. Oh, what is the advantage of noticing them? I'm telling you, the more that you can notice, the more that you have to wonder about. Not the more answers you have, but the more wonder you have. Isn't that nice? With every bit of information you get, you don't necessarily solve things. You create more mystery. I am out to create the maximum amount of mystery. I would love you to leave this show in a confused state. Not in a frightened, confused state, but more like you've been to an amusement park. I want you to be overwhelmed, suddenly, to look out and say, I am seeing my town differently. I am seeing this house differently because I have taken the blinders off and I am not going to be content. It's not that I'm going to come up with different solutions. It's not that I'm going to become a conspiracy thing. Oh, yes, you know, all this is a lie and behind it is this conspiracy. And then you just trade one story for another, one mythology for another mythology. I'm telling you, no, don't do that. I'm saying trade your mythology for pure wonder. Not that myths can't be wonder. You just got to know they're myths. That's all. Oh, because I'll tell you what, people can change the stories. People can flip things on you. Say, oh, if somebody controls history, wouldn't that be terrible? They could say that a war didn't happen or some atrocity didn't happen or they never did that bad thing to my ancestors or something. What do I do then? What do I do then? Yes, that happens. See, that's why you can't depend on that. That's why you have to be here fighting now, fighting those things now because the lies will come at you right and left. So you got to open your eyes to bat them down. And say, what if I bat these lies out and there's nothing in their place? You would rather have an empty space than a museum full of lies. You would rather have an empty building than a museum full of lies. Because you can dance in an empty building. In an empty building, I can express myself. In an empty building, I am free. If I fill it up with solutions and lies, if I filled it up with statues of grand leaders, if I filled it up with, oh, look at that. Look at that Roman emperor. Look how wonderful they are. Look how commanding. Look at that face. I don't even know if that's real. Who knows? I'm going to fill it up with something, a fake Roman emperor. Made out of, what's something good? Not mashed potatoes, that because you'd need an armature or something to put on them. What's a good material? I don't know what I've been working with lately. This just occurred, this has nothing to do with anything. I just want to, please help, I just want to understand this for a minute. We have French phrases sometimes in American English. And there's this funny thing we do with two of them where we're content with the second word remaining French, but we've got to anglicize the first word. So, for instance, double entendre, right? Double entendre, we say. Why say double entendre? Say double entendre. Double entendre. Papier-mâché. Oh, you mean paper-mâché? Well, why just the one word? Well, because now it's equitable. You have half of it's English and half of it's French. It's not all French, so we don't feel weird. Just wondering about that. Now you're an observation comedian. I'm not, because you're not laughing. Is it an observation comedian? What if you just make observations that aren't particularly funny? I always wanted to be... See, here's my problem. I'm not a comedian. I'm what you call a smile comedian. And those are bad when you do stand-up because you can't hear smiles. Right, so if I go up there, people are smiling, but they're not laughing. And you've got to hear the laughs, or actually a lot of producers will say, well, we're not hearing anything. I go, can't you get some close-ups of the, look, their faces, they're grinning, they look, you know, content. That's not enough. They got to be going, like a monkey. Like a monkey that's just been stuck with something hot. That's I'm scared of people's laughter, frankly. I think it's menacing because it's not always joyful. Sometimes it's, you've seen people laughing as they're murdering and stuff like that. I don't, you know, laughter to me is not necessarily a good thing. It scares me a little bit. But a nice smile, a smile and a nod or something while someone's knitting. That's what I require out of my audiences. I like, just smile back at me. Now, you can, if you want, when you see me in Jersey City in a couple weeks, when you do grin, if you want to go, that's the smile noise I came up with. Then I'll know you're smiling. And it doesn't sound like a boo or anything. So, you know, some people go, I'll hear that and I'll know what's going on and I'll feel good and my heart will warm. My heart's already warm. I don't want it too warm. You got to get it. I take my heart temperature by just sticking the thermometer right in my chest. It's not really good, but it gets you the most accurate one. Or ear or butt or anything. But that one's the... No, I'm just kidding. You don't do that. Don't stab yourself in the heart. Do I need to say that? Gosh, I love visiting with you. And I don't know why. I don't know why we've stayed friends for so long. I'm just so lucky. I'm just so lucky to have you. I'm trying to distract you a little bit. I'm trying to give you things to think about, but also to not think about. I'm trying to contradict myself every couple minutes. Now, on sitcoms, they have a rhythm. It'll be like beat, beat, joke. You know, doop, doop, joke, laugh. Beat, beat, joke, right? They have a rhythm, and they're supposed to get so many a minute. I have a strategy for the show. Well, I'll be like assertion, assertion, self-contradiction, assertion, assertion, self-contradiction, because I feel like, you know, otherwise you might be persuaded. And I don't know that I want to persuade anybody. I think that's a wonderful thing to do. It's just not for me, because if I'm so unsure about things, and I think that need a little bit of that, need a little bit of pure, unadulterated self-doubt, but self-doubt that's not debilitating. I don't mind living in the mystery. I don't mind saying I don't know, because I haven't given up looking. That's the thing. If I say I don't know and I don't care, that's different. But I don't know, and that keeps me paying attention, because I want to know, even if it's unattainable. Even if I can never really know, it won't stop me. I do lots of things that are futile. My life will end at some point, probably sooner than I want it to. Whenever that is, even if I'm 110, I'm sure I'll be going for 111. But it's going to end, and I know that. And yet I still brush my teeth. I still get up every day and do things as if it never would. I still try to bail out that boat, even though I know it's sinking, because I just want one more day on earth with you, my friend. That's all I'm asking for. I don't know what kind of day it'll be, but I just want one more day, even though I know there's a limited amount, and I know what the rules are. I know that no one gets out of here. I know that we all meet the same fate. I understand that. No, I don't understand it. I accept it. That's it. I don't understand it at all. In fact, it seems like the worst part of life. Losing people, to me, is absolutely the worst. It's just the worst. There's all even worse ways for it to happen. But losing people we love is absolutely the worst part. And pain. And traumatic violence. Oh, there's a lot of worse parts. But you know what? If we're together, something magical happens, especially if we agree that we're going to be friends. Then something truly great happens. And even people you think are complete jerks, they still require it. They still require kindness, and some, all human beings do. They find it with people they agree with or something. If you've got crazy beliefs or something, you find other people share those, and they'll be nice to you. Even if it's the kicking people in the face club, you're going to get other people around you who are willing to have a birthday party with you. So everybody finds those people that are, be gentle with them, that'll be their group.
My group is human beings. My group is creatures. My group is things on the earth. My group is universe, stuff stuck in the universe. That's what my group is. I don't mind it. I'm anywhere. I'm your friend. Oh, my gosh. Hardy White is your friend. I'm going to come see you, too. Are you going to come see me in New Jersey? I'm going to be there for the marathon this year. I'm going to be at Monty Hall. You got to come. I'll stand up in front of you and do this. And then you can look around at other people and say, how are other people reacting? And I'll say something. I think this show is going to be about mystery. And I'm going to talk about a certain Japanese monk that set out to define and answer mysteries and to take on monsters. And that's what I'm going to do on March 6th, is I'm going to take on mysteries and monsters right in front of you. Oh, it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be fun just because we'll be together. And we've had a relationship so long now. This is 8 years that we've been in each other's lives. It's going to be great. This is a relationship that it means so much to me. And, you know, you don't get to do it very often, whatever it is I do. I'm not sure. It'd be like, it's sort of like a TED Talk that nobody you know would want to go to. Well, what's it about? See, that's the problem. That's where they would kick me off the stage immediately. It's like, I don't know, I'm not sure it's about anything. And a lot of things I say are made up. So, there you go. I'm not sure. I guess it's like going to a, not like a movie. I don't know what it is, friends. It's like, it's not even like church, because I'm not sure there'll be anything to eat. I think there's popcorn. Maybe I'll try to bring some donuts or something. I've never even thought about that. Maybe I'd try to set you up. I wonder if that how much that would set me back. Somebody brought donuts 1 year. Cheryl brought me donuts. I thought that was really nice. I went home and I felt obligated to eat them, though, because somebody else also had brought me whiskey. I don't really drink much anymore. I tried, but that's probably not a good night, the donut whiskey experience. But the kindness has reverberated with me, and it still rings. Dong. It is like a bell. That kindness is like a bell, and it just keeps ringing. I swear I can still hear it ringing, even after it's died down, because that's how much I cherish it, and that's how much I cherish you, my friend. I'm excited about getting up there. Oh, I'm excited about talking about the radio station, talking about this thing we got here, talking about freedom of expression. Those are all important things. And, you know, everything is going to be all polished for you now. And I don't think you want that necessarily. It's good to get things in the rough. It's good to get things where you can look through them and find something. It's good to open up an old storage unit and have most of it be garbage. If it was all gold, if it was all, you know, treasure, kind of a world would that be? It'd probably be cursed like the Pharaoh's tomb. If you open up something like that and it's all treasure, beware. You want it to be mostly garbage. You want your treasure to be hidden. That's what you want. That makes life good and sweet. Oh, I will try to hide that for you. I will take the truth, or I will take something and I'm going to make it the Afikoman. And you can say, can we look for the Afikoman now? Can we look for the Afikoman now, Hardy White? And I will say, yes. And go look for it. And when you find it, you will be rewarded. Even though it is a humble piece of unleavened bread wrapped in a napkin or something. I don't know what we wrapped it in. I put it in a whiskey sack. Oh, okay. I put it in a Crown Royal bag. All right. Well, I didn't want to get crumbs everywhere. All right. Well, you find that Afikoman, all the Gentile children, and go, what? Can we? What? You can look for it too. Oh, the truth is not barred from you. My friends, you are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will see you again next week.
Jesus and his love. war right now that stands in need of a spiritual blessing right now. Stands in need of a financial blessing. They got a bill needs to be paid. I want everyone right now just come and lay your hands on the radio, because I'm going to make contact with my Savior. I'm going to make contact with my bread maker. I'm going to make contact with my blesser. I want you right now to bring the bills and lay them on the radio.
Oh, singing it. When you give the best of your service, telling the world that the Savior is come. You be not dismayed when men don't believe you. I know you'll understand, and you'll say, well done.
You'll say, well done. Yes, you will say, well done. You know then he'll understand. He'll say, son, well done.
Misunderstood, oh Lord, the Savior of sinners. Hung and he died on the cross. Tell me he was God's foundation.